Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I know there's a lot of controversy about the show Lost, how it ended, how people feel about its legacy, but I do think it's universally agreed, however you feel about the ending, that the fifth episode of the fourth season, The Constant, is not just the greatest episode of the series, but one of the greatest episodes of TV of all time. And that episode just would not work without the performance of Henry Ian Cusack as Desmond Hume. And we're going to talk about Desmond for the next half hour here in the Doom Room. I'm Alex.
Wow, this is the most understated intro we've ever done. Honestly, that was very different than what it usually is like, because usually it's like riding down on a log flume. Boom, boom, you're in the Zoom Room. Doom Room, Justin here.
I'm Pete.
And we're going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 4, Episode 5, Youth Patrol. Woo-hoo! So if you haven't checked it out on HBO Max, do go check it out, because we're going to get into spoilers. But broad plot here.
Underground. We got the underground.
Back a little bit briefly. Not all of them. I'm sure we'll get into that in a second. But due to Rita losing her immortality, she accidentally causes a spell that sends everybody, typical Doom Patrol fashion, not exactly making them younger, but it makes them mentally younger and kind of physically younger. And the rules are inexact, but that's purposeful for ridiculousness. They end up taking a cross-country journey to break the spell. And it leads to some twists that ties into the overall thrust of the series. I'll just say this up front. This is my favorite episode of the season so far, and maybe one of my favorite episodes of Doom Patrol of all time.
Wow.
What a big swing you're taking here. I mean, I agree. This was my favorite episode of this season as well.
Agreed.
Great. And the second part, guys?
No.
Oh, wow.
No. Alex, no. The whole series? What are you, crazy?
And maybe, I mean, it's on par with, I would say, The Constant, which is the greatest episode of Lost of all time and one of the greatest episodes of TV of all time.
What, are you in a Lost rewatch right now?
I don't want to downplay the actress who played Penny. Who was that? Was that Elizabeth Mitchell? It was not Elizabeth.
I don't know. Read the tattoo on your inner bicep.
Exactly.
You guys have seen the show Prison
That's not
Break,
your
right?
Bicep,
where he's
by
like,
the way.
I don't know what my muscles or bones are. Pete,
wow.
Come on, stop testing me. Unless it rhymes with doom, I don't know what it is.
At the end of this podcast, Alex is going to take his temperature, and it's going to be like 107. Because this dude is ill.
I will say, I made my excuse. I did spend all night last night puking in the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
Save it for 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, Jesus. Leave him some options.
Also, let me say, rhyming room with room, baller.
I did really like this episode, though. I think it was very strong and very fun. There were some great emotional moments throughout. And, yeah, I don't know. I think that's part of the reason that it got me is – it this is one of the weirdest de-aging things I think I've ever seen in TV or movies, and purposefully so. They basically wanted to put Vic in braces. They wanted to put Cliff in a cowboy hat. What's the most fun way of doing it? Let's not make too many excuses about it or come up with very specific rules. Let's just go for it and do it in Doom Patrol fashion. And I thought that was great.
Well, I also like it feels like it's emotionally driven as well, where it's what are some ways we can get people to actually say their feelings? And making them teenagers is a good way to do that. And we get a little bit of that throughout the episode. In addition to these fun physical things that we get to see and do, I like that it affects Willoughby completely differently in a funny, but not explained way. I agree with you. It feels like there's some writerly stuff happening where they're like, we want to do this fun stuff, but they always find a way to tie it to the emotionality and character arcs that are happening in the show as well. So it just works.
Yeah, there you go. And I'll shout this out before I forget to mention it earlier. I think the other thing that really elevated in my mind was the Chef's Kiss Riverdale reference that happened about 10 minutes before the end. That was just great.
You know we clocked it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well,
come
I mentioned
on.
For anybody who's listening to the podcast and maybe didn't pick up on it, because there's a couple of layers here. So when young Jane and young Willoughby, I think it is, the two of them together confront Cliff, who's in the middle of this pool party. He's going a little nuts, and they're like, what is wrong with you? Why are you being so weird? And he says, I'm weird. Have you ever seen me without this oven mitt? That's weird. That is pretty much line for line the classic Jughead, I'm a weirdo, I wear a hat speech from the first season of Riverdale, I think.
I believe it's the first season.
I want to say it's the second, maybe, but...
Might be the second. But the other layer here is this episode was written by frequent Doom Patrol writer and producer Shoshana Shachi. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. And she is married to Brian E. Patterson, the guy who wrote that speech, or at least wrote that episode back in the day. So there's a fun little tie there, probably ribbing him a little bit about the speech. We actually interviewed him on our Riverdale podcast, and he was like, I don't remember who wrote that. I'm sorry. So
hilarious. Season one, episode 10.
There you go. Jughead's birthday, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you guys want to, just real quick, because I'm not feeling well, if we could transition into talking about Riverdale, that's much more like that.
Yeah. Alex is trying to turn it into his comfort zone.
Anything like that.
Yeah, no, you got to stay and talk about, you're the most doomed of us currently right now, so we're going to have to talk about Doom Patrol.
Absolutely.
But we can walk through the episode if that helps you get a little bit of stability in your life, Alex.
Well, I do want to start with the underground since Pete already brought it up. So Jane is dealing with the fact that she has a very sexual puzzle that she's dealing with.
And haven't we all been there? Like a fairy? When a puzzle winks at you, that's a puzzle that's flirting with you right there.
Yeah,
hello.
It's a little extra, but Ravenburger in particular, they make those really good winky pieces that are like, oh yeah, it's on.
Alex dropping some puzzle manufacturer knowledge.
I really like puzzles.
No, you're a puzzle guy.
Not surprising.
Yeah, look, he's pointing to a wall of puzzles behind him.
Yeah, there's a literal pile of puzzles behind me. So.
If you love puzzles, though, when was the last puzzle you did?
It was 2 days ago.
Nice. Pete, when was the last puzzle you did?
The 80s? What was
I did a puzzle 45 minutes ago. So in your face, Alex, with my daughter. She was like, can we do this puzzle? And I said, yes.
Don't just say puzzle. Tell us what it was. Like, what was the, was it a spaceship?
I've never solved a puzzle.
When you say a puzzle, you mean cut up pieces of paper just lying on the floor, right? And you try to get them back together. You're like, that's daddy's work.
Yeah, the puzzle of life. I try to put my life back together based on the decisions I've made.
It was a 1,000-piece Marvel villainous puzzle based on Cinderella. So there you
what?
Go.
Oh, wow. That's not
that's,
real.
Yeah,
that's
it's
also
real.
Complicated.
There's too many stuff. Crossovers in that. What
I
would
know,
that even be?
It came with this piece for Marvel Villainous, which is a board game. So that was the villainous part. And then otherwise, it was just like a Cinderella puzzle focusing on Lady Tremaine and the stepsisters, and Cinderella kind of shoved into the background of it.
Okay,
why are we talking about this again?
I'm sorry I asked.
Get back and talk about the underground, because you've been asking for this all season long, and we finally got in the midst of Jane having sexy puzzle time. She got sent to the underground, which she thought was because of that. It was not.
We're fast forwarding past a key fun moment. Jane lights up first, you know what I mean? She takes a little puff first, and then, you know what I mean? Let's not.
And she's smoking a classic bowl. That's a classic, yeah, old school. Like, the weed looked, like, pretty dry. I was like, I've seen that image in my hand before.
Oh, man.
Well, and I'll also mention, and I know you guys are going to hate this because you hate when I bring up information about things, but I did interview Diane Guerrero for work, and she talked a little bit about this scene in particular, as well as the previous scene where the Shelley fog comes out of the puzzle and she has an orgasm. And she said she was very surprised about this because coming in at season one, because Jane and by extension Kay is dealing with sexual assault, she felt like, okay, I've never done a sex scene. This is off the table. This is not anything that's ever going to happen. So this is the first time she said she has ever done anything like this in anything that she's ever done.
Oh, wow.
Watched Encanto, you know, that's definitely true. There's not a lot of sexy scenes in Encanto. No. What's up, Justin?
No, that's, I got to say you're accurate. Weird choice of reference. But the Encanto puzzle's pretty sexual, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It winked at me. Anyway, so it's interesting to think about, like, four seasons in, what it is like to be thrust into the situation. And I think she channels those emotions very effectively when she is thrown down to the underground and is like, I wasn't doing anything. What are you talking about?
And that was hysterical. And they were all like, what? And she was like, well, huh, what? That was
It's very much a, like, parents catch you masturbating moment for her. And it's just in the lens of Jane, it's like her secret split personality underground is what is catching her. She's catching herself, technically.
It sounds like you're speaking from personal experience, and I don't want to hear the story.
It's a cultural experience, Pete.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm talking about. Nope. But I really like the way that this really lined up with sort of the teen, the youth exploration here. And you hear a line from Jane later where she's like, you know, I never really had a teenage. I was never like this. And that really matched in such a great way. This really felt like a strong, just Jane episode in general.
Agree.
Now, Pete, you're really dancing around this, though. We got the underground back. You've been asking for Chainsaw Nun. We got to see Chainsaw Nun. We did not see Hammerhead there.
Oh, so disappointing. But man, the Chainsaw Nun, small but just amazing moment. And I was so happy that we got it. It was just so nice to be back in the underground a little bit, to kind of get that, because Jane's been dealing with a lot. We've kind of ignored that part. So it was just such a nice place to be back to see all these characters again. It sucks we didn't see a lot of all of them, or some, you know, Hammerhead, one of the fan faves, but Chainsaw Nun was representing nicely.
And let me say, at this point in the episode, we had a bowl, we had the underground, and then the next scene, Cliff is working on a car. I literally was like, did Pete write this episode? Because this is truly too much Pete. Like, I feel like Pete was going to have a Doom Patrol based orgasm right as he was watching this.
Yeah, it was glorious.
What did you think about the car, Pete? I know you've been super into the car.
It was such a, first off, amazing gesture by Madame Rouge to set this all up. So I was just super, super into it. We got to kind of get inside her head a lot and find out what she's been kind of dealing with. And her and Rita had, you know, later on in the episode, some really touching conversations. But yeah, to kind of gift Cliff this way was very moving. And I was super excited about it. I really hope we get more episodes of Cliff just working on the car, you know?
Season or series of that. Do you wish, Pete, that the car had been spilled a little bit of the youth spell on it, and it had grown into like a micro machine or whatever?
Oh, nice reference, dude.
Micro machines grow up to be Hot Wheels and then eventually real cars, right?
Exactly. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah, I've been watering this micro machine for the last 20 years, so when it turns into a fucking car.
Sorry, real quick. Have you been watering your kids as well? Because I don't know, man.
How else do you get stuff to grow? Yeah. Huh? it's working. It's
water,
working.
Fertilizer, and they're good to go, man.
Sunshine. Exactly. Don't forget about sunshine.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Kids need lots of sunshine, fertilizer, and water. Great. Why don't we jump back to Jane's storyline and talk through that a little bit? Just because we already started there, I think we can go through the rest of the stuff that happens. I did want to ask you, Justin, you expressed some concern about the amounts of different types of fog that we're currently getting in the show. We got more types of fog here in terms of a rainbow spell fog that showed up several times. Are you furious about this?
Yeah. Well, and later we got a fog that came out of Jane's mouth after she was smoking, and it became a whole vision she had. So this season is foggy. It's a foggy season. That's not, I think, the reference there. I'm curious what the deal is. They keep going to the fog well.
I mean, I think it makes sense for Jane because she is dealing with her attraction to Shelley, a.k.a. the fog from the Sisterhood of Dada. But to your point, Justin, we've now had three different types of fog that are going on.
More fog.
I would say four fogs. We're up to four fogs, and I'm going to keep counting. And if we get up to six fogs, that's officially too many fogs, and we have to shut this whole thing down.
No.
The rainbow fog was not particularly subtle in that scene as Jane went to talk to Kay. But I did like it anyway. I'm cool with an unsubtle reference if they want to go for it. But we got like a bunch of really good conversation with Jane over the course of the episode. Yeah. I thought I really like this friendship that's developing between her and Vic, which is very surprising. I thought they had a great conversation by the pool. And then also Jane's conversation with Kay in that dream state or fog state or whatever it was beautiful as well.
So touching.
I agree. Like the thing where she was like, I'm sorry I took your body, right? And then she says, it's our body. I thought that was giving Jane legitimacy, I think, is something that she's been chasing from the beginning of the series. And I think to get it here was one of the big revelations that made this episode really important, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So good stuff there, and also predictably good stuff with Jane and Cliff. To get back to the weirdo moment, though, Jane and Cliff seem to be in a very good place this season. Why do you think they're fighting towards the end here? Is this more about Cliff? Is it about Jane? Is it about them? Where do you think that's coming from?
I think they have some unresolved issues from the early, like they were very close for a while and then fully enemies, basically. And I think that hasn't been dealt with, and hasn't been dealt with is basically the motto of this show. So hopefully we'll get them to deal with it a little bit. And especially I think Jane's concerned because now that Cliff isn't swearing or everyone else is swearing as much as Cliff, she knows that he's basically not an important character anymore.
Come on, man. Don't say that.
That took you way too long to take that bait.
Exactly. We did. And let's just add all you conspiracy theorists out there. We did not add any reaction time in that. That took Pete that long to realize that I was dumping on
Cliff. I was looking at my notes of the episode.
And you're like, wait a second. What's that asshole saying?
What's that
talking about Cliff? Basically, if Cliff's car can say fuck, it's basically replacing
him. Oh, stop.
Let's talk about Cliff then, because over the course of the episode, I feel like he almost suffers the biggest emotional regression. Everybody else comes to these emotional catharses throughout the episode, but Cliff, he's got this car now that's reminding him of his race car days. He's got a cowboy hat. He's going to parties. Everybody loves him. What is the direction of Cliff after this? Like, where does this take him? Where is this on his journey? Because like I was saying before, and like you were getting at, Justin, this is an enormous step back for him. So where does that put him, and where does he need to go forward?
Well, I think it's one of those things where, you know, with his kind of freak out where he yells that he is not doing well, it's, you know, it's a little bit of a cry for help. Like, somebody, I need to kind of unload a little bit and kind of talk about the fact that he's still shook from his first touch being like the inside of somebody's skull. So I think it's just one of those things of like, he needs to kind of vent a little bit. You know, it was nice that he was able to at least have a couple moments of a party. But yeah, he needs Jane. He needs somebody that he can kind of like connect with, confide in, and kind of get some of this stuff he's carrying around with off his metal chest.
He just seems like the character who is not able to deal with himself. Like, he's the worst at it. Everyone else is making some steps forward and seems to at least be interested in themselves. He is just interested in only whatever's right in front of him. In this case, like having a party, being young, and keeping his oven mitt on. And it just feels like he's not interested in being better.
Yeah, pretty much. Why don't we talk about Vic? There's not a ton of Vic in this episode, but there are some fun bits throughout, as he is clearly a huge nerd, even though he was a football star when he was a teen. But I almost feel like the biggest moment, we mentioned the conversation I had with Jane that I think was a little more about Jane, in my opinion. But the biggest moment really is towards the end when he's regressed to his boyhood self and is crying and goes back to see his friend and connect with him. That was a really surprising gut punch to me right at the end of the episode.
Yeah, that got me, man.
Well, it seems like he needs to, and all of them, the damage that is done to our psyches is often done when we're kids. Like, those are the issues that we carry into our adulthood. It feels like this trip into their youth may be what they need, and maybe Vic can sort of get right with the way he's been feeling and then make that step forward. Same with Madame Rouge, same with Rita a little bit. It feels like they're all able to be young for a second and allow them to deal with some of the truths. And Vic's the sort of best at it. Love the exchange about him having braces. I thought that was fun. You got your medal back. And then he says to Jane, "Would shut up, Hot Topic," or whatever. Like, that was very fun.
But I do think for Vic, it is one of those things where, you know, we kind of learn about this robotics club, this tight friendship that he had, and how much it's really eating at him. So I think it was huge reveal that, you know, he went back there, you know, to be with his friend and kind of make things right. And you talk about like being able to move forward, and I'm hoping that conversation that he's going to have with his friend, hopefully, if they can have a conversation after the friend gets over the fact that he's gone back in time and is now a younger him, he can then kind of move past it. Because this team needs a leader, and I'm not sure if it's going to be Madame Rouge or if it's going to be Vic or if it's going to be Rita, but somebody needs to step up and kind of keep us pointed in the right direction here, because the stakes keep getting higher and higher with each episode, and we need our team to kind of rally here if we're going to make it out alive.
I would throw out there, not to disagree with you, I understand what you're saying, but I think Doom Patrol is a team that very expressly does not need a leader and functions best when they don't have a leader. Like, certainly it heads them down some really bad paths because they don't have that organizing principle that you're talking about. But whenever you have somebody like a chief, like a Rita, like a Madame Rouge, who steps up, they immediately shut down. They're like, well, fine, I don't need to do anything, and just sit back there with their arms crossed, cracking jokes. And that's pretty much it. They need each other, and they need each other equally. The problems in my mind come either when somebody steps up to be the leader or when one of them steps out and is like, nah, I'm going to go do my own thing and figure out my own stuff. They need each other to figure out their stuff. That's how they move forward, in my mind.
Yeah, also, every time a leader steps up, they end up doing something selfish. So I think they need to all work together or all be tiny leaders on their own.
Or some of them needs to be a good enough leader not to be a dick about it and kind of use the talent so people feel good about it.
I don't think there is that person on this team.
Yeah. Well, it could be a couple of them.
I don't think so. They've all had their shot.
I disagree.
Who do you think? Who do you think is the best leader for the Doom Patrol, Pete?
Well, I think if, you know,
it's you, Vic isn't it?
Can
It's you.
If Vic can grow enough to it, or if Rita can do it in a way that is not annoying, is not kind of driving everybody crazy, or, you know, it could be Jane, you know, it could be any of them. But I just think it's one of those things where they have to put the team in front of themselves. Everybody's being selfish right now and working on their own stuff, which is fine. But, you know, it's just about finding a way to communicate with people and getting motivated that doesn't trigger them or piss them off, you know.
It is funny to me that you mentioned every character except Larry, because I think we could all agree the one person who should not be leader is Larry.
Well, Keeg is a good leader. He's getting shit done. Keeg's out there handling business.
Well, and in this episode, I was hoping for a big LTF, and we got sort of a medium LTF. He's off on his own mission to get Keeg back, having these visions. He encounters Mr. 104.
Mm-hmm. His name is Mohinder from Heroes.
It's Mohinder, yeah.
Mohinder from Heroes.
Well, Mr. 104 is actually a character from the Doom Patrol comics. I don't know if you knew that, who is able to change.
I don't really care. He's Mohinder from Heroes, and that's what I know him as.
I think you got to open your eyes a little bit beyond that.
Really. I don't really read the comics, and I don't care about the comics. What I do care about is real superhero stuff like Heroes on NBC.
Wow.
The official title of the show, Heroes on NBC. Wow. Lost, Puzzles, and Heroes. You certainly have a perfect content diet, Mr. Chapman. I think that's why you're sick.
You're not supposed to eat the puzzles, right? That's what I'm starting to realize today.
You've been eating bad content and puzzles.
Okay. The pieces really get stuck in your throat. Let's talk about Larry's storyline since we're starting to get into it. It's clear, I think, that there is a little bit of a romance developing between Mohinder and Larry, but we go back in time and see how they were both essentially trained to be weapons, living weapons, by the Bureau of Normalcy. Mohinder's power seems to be taking moisture out of people and controlling it. I think that's what was going on.
That's what he does there, but his actual power set is to – he can control the elements from, like, the periodic table of elements. The name Mr. 104 is actually a reference to the number of elements that were on the table when the character was created. That's since changed, so sort of an older – he was actually called Mr. 103 first and then Mr. 104 later, and now we're up to, like, 118, I think.
Wow. Science, man. Keep discussing. Yeah. That's what I love about the periodic table. I keep getting older, and they keep adding elements.
Oh, my God.
All right.
Stop being creepy. So I think it's one of those things, though. I was really impressed by the reveal of, like, at first, kind of like we saw Trainer kind of in there, and then it was later revealed that Mohinder was the one who was witnessing it. And it was such a cool kind of, like, switcheroo of, like, who was in the room and what was actually happening. I really loved the way this episode portrayed that. I thought that was very unique and very creative.
When it feels like Keeg is sort of making a match here, I don't know to what, because that was the part I was like,
matchmaker,
you know, this guy's
matchmaker, make me sorry.
100%. This guy is with Dr. Junior Anus, so it's not like he is necessarily good. He could be tricking Larry here, but
just say Janus, man. You don't have to.
I believe it's pronounced Junior Anus, canonically in the comics. But the moment when Keeg jumps from Mr. 104 over to LT, that makes me – I trust Keeg. And then right then, Larry gets cut out of reality and sucked in, and 104 goes after him.
We should also mention the overarching plot that gets revealed by Willoughby here, that they're coming for their immortality, which is something that we have talked about on this podcast incessantly over the course of the previous seasons of how are these people so old? How have they lived for so long? And there are various reasons for it. So I love this twist here that the enemy is very expressly going for this thing that beyond all of the other weirdness on the show is one of the plot weirdness things that doesn't quite jibe. So I'm very curious to see where we end at the end of this, because I feel like they are going to lose their immortality across the board. Yeah. So where does that leave them? Maybe that leaves them more doomed.
Probably older.
Speaking of the end of the episode, was that rabbit like freaking you guys the fuck out, or was that just me? I mean,
pretty normal rabbit to me.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Every night, Rabbit sucks the puzzle pieces out of my throat that same way.
Saves your life.
Yeah, it wasn't here last night. That's why I got sick.
Wow. Well, I think the it feels like this show wants to sort of eat every piece of every item they've put on the table, to your point, Alex. So, like, the Doom Patrol being sort of timeless, I feel like is a great thing for them to get into. It's like improvisers doing a show. You want to go after all the stuff that feels fun, follow the fun. Any incongruity is something we have to talk about that because it's already established on the table. Pete, to your point, that rabbit, suspicious rabbit. Rabbit, who we thought was against Immortus, but we see the rabbit at the end seemingly suck the immortality out of Baby Jane. Maybe for safe, quote unquote, safekeeping, or maybe Rabbit is secretly working for Immortus.
We'll find out whatever happened to Baby Jane next episode, I assume.
100%.
Yeah.
Also, I was surprised the ending with Doom Patrol, not in good shape. They're going to vanish.
Yeah, they're just going to become zygotes at the end there. I do want to take a quick step back and talk about my absolute favorite moment in the episode, which was Jane and Rita talking on the park bench.
Yeah,
I thought this scene. Rouge and Rita?
Oh, yes, Rouge and Rita, excuse me. Talking on the park bench. Oh, actually, you know what? Since it was Rouge, I don't care anymore. Never mind.
Yeah. Wow.
No, Rouge, it was a beautiful scene. We've had this thread, not just for this season, but two seasons now about them being friends and then hating each other, particularly this season. Rouge has been trying to figure out how can she reconnect with Rita? What could she possibly do to make her like her again and be friends? And like you were talking about earlier, Justin, in terms of using the metaphorical sense of what it's like to be a teenager, your emotions are more on the surface. You're more able to have these big feelings come out, these big fights with your friends in a way that you'd and reconcile with your friends in a way that you don't necessarily as you get older. So using that as a vehicle there for first Rouge to reveal, oh yeah, she's getting younger too. She was just scared to make herself look like that.
I thought that was cool.
And the way Michelle Gomez plays the scene, the way the camera just hangs on her the entire time as well as she's confessing and breaking down to Rita and just begging her. And then ultimately pulling the camera back. So we see them both these teenage girls at the same age, hugging each other. I thought it was beautiful. The whole thing was laid out beautifully, acted beautifully. I was really impressed and very touched by that sequence.
The show takes these like strange stories and like sort of like wonky ideas and builds them to these great, surprising emotional moments. And like, they just do it. They're so good at doing that.
Any other moments from the episode that you guys want to call out? Pete, you've been furiously looking through your notes while Justin's been baiting you. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, yeah, I thought it was just like, kind of classic Doom Patrol where Willoughby shows up and he's like, all right, we need everybody because the shit's hitting the fan. And it's like, well, we're already in the middle of a shit storm with Rita kind of like spilling a spell and fucking this all up in a way that like really makes it harder for them to accomplish their goal. And I thought that was like such a kind of like fun, classic Doom Patrol thing of like, you got to get here earlier than that. If you're going to talk to us about, you got to rally the troops before, because it takes a little bit for this team to get going anywhere. So, I just like the fact that like Willoughby thinks he can show up and be like, okay, everybody, all right, team meeting, we got to do this, we got to save the world, and it's like, well, we got like a serious aging problem.
Well, and he's used to the Niles being able to work through Niles' organizational system, and that's not there anymore. And just to mention, Pete held up his notes a minute ago to the listener, and it just said, mention weed written in chocolate on a Hershey bar wrapper. So I don't know
a big weed episode, man. I mean, you got rain clouds coming out of the smoke. It was just it was magical. You know what I mean?
Couple things I would say, like those butts were wiped front to back. I thought was really fun. The cool teens that they buy beer for and then who take them to the party, yassified cyber cowboy describing Cliff that way, I thought was really funny. And then something that I think is maybe a little bit of look to the future, we get a Mr. Nobody reference here, a character we haven't heard about in a long time. Last episode, we speculated that maybe at the end of the day, Mr. Nobody is the big bad at the end of this season/series. And I think that was a big clue to say that we may be on the right track there.
Yeah. One other thing that I wanted to call out, which is very to the side, and I don't know if this was purposeful, but when Willoughby showed up in the back of Cliff's car, people probably know this, but he played Crowley, the demon, for years on Supernatural, and him popping up there seemed like a very stealth Easter egg to that, because he would do that, like just show up at the back of the Winchester's car all the time. So I don't know, maybe an Easter egg, maybe not. Before we wrap up here,
it is an Easter egg.
Anything is an Easter egg if you use your eyes and look at it. Let's talk about who is most doomed this episode. Justin, who do you think is most doomed?
Well, first off, I maintain that it's you, Alex, given the current state of affairs. But I think otherwise, I mean, I got to go with Cliff, I think. Cliff, he's sinking. He's not doing so hot. And I just don't know what's going to happen to him.
Pete, what about you? Who's most doomed?
I got to go with Jane. You know, I'm worried about this underground. I'm worried, you know, she took a nice step forward a little bit with Kay, but I'm just worried about, selfishly, I'm worried about being able to see a Hammerhead again and what's going to happen to the underground. It seems like we're getting less and less of them, and I don't like where that's going.
Yeah, I got to say Larry, probably. He has been sucked through a portal to who knows where. That's probably big trouble for him. And if you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and more. And now, before we go, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Youth is fleeting, okay? Enjoy where you are, because we only go around once.
Wow. Nice.
Oh, there's Lady Tremaine's face.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.